Delivering this week's must-watch workplace storylines, this is Bloomberg Law's Punching In, for those of you listening in Washington and across the globe.
Hey folks, thanks for punching in with us today. I'm Hassan Kanu with Bloomberg Law's Labor and Employment News Desk, and I'll be joined this week by Matthew Haller. Matt's a longtime source of mine. He's a senior VP of Government Relations and Public Affairs at the IFA. That's the International Franchise Association. And so you can probably guess by now that Matt is generally sort of educating folks, communicating with different stakeholders, business owners, obviously folks in Congress and actual lawmakers about the concerns of the franchise industry. And Matt previously held a similar sort of role at the Chamber of Commerce, which is the largest lobbying group in the country. So Matt's quite well-versed and well-positioned in terms of making the case for business, right, on various labor policy issues. And we'll be talking about a big one today, which is joint employment. So, hey, Matt, thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Hassan. Great to be with you.
Yeah. So as I said, we're talking joint employer. The DOL recently announced, maybe a week and a half ago now, maybe two, recently announced that they would issue a rule about joint employment. And that's about essentially when one company that uses contractors or subcontractors can be held liable for labor violations against those subcontractors or for bargaining. And I'm actually given the labor board definition there. The labor board is also working on a rule. But Matt, tell us a bit about what the DOL rule would do, and then we'll get into sort of the fact that both these two agencies are working on the same area simultaneously.
Yeah, thanks, Hassan. Super important issue for our members, and as you guys know, as the Labor Department, both in the Obama administration and now in the Trump administration, know this is where most of the action has really been,
right,
for our members, unless you look at McDonald's. Because while a lot of the press coverage and the media interest and political intrigue has been on the National Labor Relations Act side of things, mm-hmm. You know, we've looked at the joint employer problem as one that has evolved and metastasized over time, mm-hmm. Building off of the NLRB's change of the rules back in 2014-15 timeframe, ultimately right. with Browning Ferris. And then the Labor Department expanding their definition of joint employment and really giving a roadmap to plaintiffs' attorneys and others, labor activists, for the Fair Labor Standards Act side of things, which it, you know, includes a private right of action. And so that's where a lot of the litigation has occurred.
Right.
A lot of cases that don't necessarily make front page news mm-hmm. have been filed against both franchisees and franchise brands, alleging that, you know, lots of things that franchisers do to make the business model successful for their franchisees mm-hmm. have been cited as evidence of joint employment right. in the Fair Labor Standards Act space.
Right.
And it's cost our members significant amounts of money to settle this type of litigation, which prior to the reinterpretation by Administrator Weil in 2015 were routine matters that franchisors could get out from under right. without having to litigate or having to go to summary judgment. And so brands have been faced with a lot of uncertainty about continue to operate the way they are and face that type of threat of litigation
right.
For things that were, you know, generally routine before, or cut back on products and services and support of their franchisees. And then you face a different type of consequence, which is, you know, you're dealing with in a large system, you know, thousands of business owners that you've contracted with to operate these restaurants or hotels or other service related businesses mm-hmm. that you were providing something to before. And now because the federal government has changed the rules and also not clearly defined what the new safe ground is, you're giving less support and brand support to those business owners. So right. it's been a lose-lose proposition for brands over the last 3 or 4 years. And so this is something that we're very excited about, the Labor Department taking this first step and proposing this rule.
Right, right. And, you're making the point there that, you know, so part of the reason why folks, there's a lot of focus put on the NLRB is not, you know, not just because they sort of moved in the space a bit faster or earlier than the Department of Labor. And as I was saying, obviously, that their rule concerns more unions and organizing activity, whereas what you're talking about when you mentioned private right of action is about things like, say, someone's not being paid the proper overtime rate, someone's not being paid for all the hours they worked in a month or a year or whatever it might be. And yeah, those cases are actually a lot more common. You see a lot more litigation sort of in that area. So obviously, there's that's the reason for all the concern here. So tell us a bit, what do you think? It seems to me the two rules coming out of both agencies are pretty similar. I mean, would you characterize the fact that they're both moving here? Do you think this is some sort of coordinated attempt to provide the sort of clarity that businesses have sought in this area and have that apply across the board, both to wage cases and to sort of union or organizing matters as well?
Well, I don't know that I could say that it's a coordinated attempt. Obviously, the NLRB is independent
agency,
and
right.
up to itself. As much as we felt like in the last administration there was a concerted effort by organized labor, in particular SEIU and some of their allies, to
expand the rule and make it easier
to expand the joint employment definition. And you know, we actually had, I think you guys covered this, some evidence that. Mr. Griffin, the general counsel at the time, and David Weil were, in communication and
right.
perhaps in cahoots to change the rules on the collective bargaining side and on the enforcement side at DOL,
the wage
in coordination
side.
With Fight for 15.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I mean, in the business community, we've been coordinating our efforts to advocate for clarity on joint employment generally. At all levels, right? We've been primarily asking Congress to pass the law, the Save Local Business Act, that would create certainty and amend the Fair Labor Standards Act and the National Labor Relations Act with, a definition that was widely adopted by both the Labor Board and the Department of Labor and courts prior to the 2014 beginning of the joint employer debate to begin with. So that's been the business community's coordinated position. We've certainly been lobbying the Trump administration and lobbying Congress to lobby the Trump administration in the wake of the Save Local Business Act, not becoming law last Congress, for rulemakings in this area. And so, we're excited about both departments taking these rulemakings on.
You're talking about certainty here, and you did also say that it's a pretty early phase of the rule. But that's one issue that came up already mid or late last week, right? Some folks were making the case. I'm sure you saw this or heard the chatter about this. Basically, based on the fact that the White House has a rule under President Trump that every new regulation has to be offset with two deregulatory actions, right? And what's considered a deregulatory action is based on it's supposed to have total cost less than zero. That's the quote there. And some folks are making the point that the DOL, said in its proposed rule that this will cost businesses, I think, between $320 million to $412 million in terms of just kind of getting up to speed, learning how to comply with the new standards, et cetera, et cetera. How do you think the DOL might overcome that hitch, or do you see it as much of a hitch at all?
I don't see it as a hitch. I see this as generating economic activity. This is the type of rule that is creating certainty for employers and employees, and is as, what was rescinded by Secretary Acosta early in his tenure, while it may have not been a rule per se,
right.
It has the effect of a rule. And I'm referring to the joint employer guidance that Administrator Weil issued, and that he directed,
which isn't binding, but it's generally kind of regarded that way to avoid the risk of litigation. Is the point you're making there?
Right. I mean, that's to us, to our members, we view that as essentially a roadmap for plaintiffs' attorneys to file more ambitious suit. This has been a massive issue that our members have had to deal with I know there's some on the other side that want to say that we have, you know, created a lobbyist-generated fantasy around this. But, you know, look, we work for our members, and, you know, this isn't an issue that, you know, only McDonald's has come to us and said, go fight. This is an issue that permeates the entire franchise sector. You know, we have, there's 3,000 different franchise brands operating in America right now, and 733,000 of these franchise businesses out there. Right. And, you know, there's a case to be made that this has changed the way every single one of them have operated over the last 5 years.
Right. All right. So, yeah, definitely a very important policy, and we'll keep up with both those rulemakings and definitely report on any significant developments along the way. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Hassan. Great to be with you.
All right. Thanks to everyone for listening to this week's edition of the Punching In podcast. For the latest labor and employment news, check out the weekly Punching In news column. That's at news.bloomberglaw.com. And click the tab for Day Labor Report. If you'd like to be added to the mailing list for the weekly column and this podcast, contact my colleague Chris Opfer at copfer, C-O-P-F-E-R, at bloomberglaw.com. And you can always find me throughout the week on Twitter at Hassan Kanu. We'll see you back here next week.